Hi, my name is Larry Garfield, and you might know me from a dozen or so DrupalCon presentations about advanced development techniques and the Drupal database layer. You are listening to episode 9 of the Modules Unraveled podcast.
Welcome to the Modules Unraveled podcast, where the Drupal community speaks. And now your host, he built his first website when he was 12 years old, Brian Lewis.
Welcome to the Modules Unraveled podcast. My name is Brian Lewis, and today I have with me Larry Garfield. Larry has been building websites since he was a sophomore in high school, and as a freelancer, he worked mostly for Chicago area politicians before graduating to full-time consulting with Palantir.net. Larry is a senior architect and technical lead at Palantir, and he's worked at Palantir nearly as long as he's been involved in Drupal. Larry is an active Drupal core contributor, including the principal architect and maintainer of the Drupal 7 database system. He is also a former member of the Drupal Association Board of Directors and now an advisor to the association, and was one of the organizers of DrupalCon Chicago 2011. Larry holds a master's degree in computer science from DePaul University. He's a regular presenter at DrupalCons and Drupal Camps, frequently talking about software architecture. He is a co-author of Drupal 7 Module Development from Pact Publishing and has also been published in Drupal Watchdog. He blogs at both Palantir.net and GarfieldTech.com. And more recently, Larry has been working on the Whiskey initiative for Drupal 8. So today, Larry is going to talk to us about the future of Drupal core and how it will affect the future of everyone using Drupal. But before we jump into that, Larry, how are you doing?
I'm good. A bit tired at the end of the week, but feeling good.
Great. So Larry, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about who you are and where you're from?
So name's Larry Garfield. You may know me as Krell online, C-R-E-L-L, from the Chicago area, actually Evanston, a suburb and home of Northwestern University, where I did not in fact go for school. Lived here my whole life, recently bought a house here, not planning to leave anytime soon.
All right. How did you get started with Drupal?
Oh, dear. It's going back a couple of years now. Back in 2005, I was recently let go from a job as a journalist, actually. I used to cover handhelds and cell phones for a living. And so I went back into web development and was trying to work as a freelancer, which is to say I was unemployed. And so was looking for a system that I could learn and study from, or study and learn from, to write a new bulletin board system for the Star Trek role-playing club that I'm in online. Yeah, very geeky. And so I looked at the time, WordPress, and kind of ran screaming. I looked at what at the time was called Mambo and decided I really couldn't customize it to the degree I wanted to. It was just too glitzy. There was too much in the admin interface. And I looked at, a friend of mine recommended, I looked at this thing called Drupal that the Howard Dean campaign had used. And so I looked at it, which at the time was the brand spanking new Drupal 4.6, and decided, you know what, this is kind of weird, but I can work with this. And those who know their Drupal history know that's about the time that the server went down. Drupal.org at the time was running on a shared host, if you can believe that. And the server that Drupal.org was hosted on got hacked through another site on the same server. And so some of the people who were running the site said, okay, we need to move to a dedicated server, put up a demo page saying, hey, community, can you get us $3,000 in donations for a server that we can host at Open Source Labs. And within 72 hours, they had $10,000 in donations, and Tim Bray at Sun just sent them a server.
Wow.
Yeah. And I looked at that and went, this is a community that's going somewhere. This is a community that is alive. You know, the code I can work with, but this is a community that I'm willing to hook my horse to. Yeah. And you know, started using it for some freelance consulting and never looked back. I did eventually get that Star Trek site built. It's still in Drupal 5, unfortunately. I'm working at it.
So it's still going?
It's still going. It's up to nearly a 500,000 nodes in Drupal 5. Wow. And I'm trying to get it upgraded, or actually rebuilt in Drupal 7, but I just don't have much time to work on it.
Yeah. Great. So you're working for Palantir now. Tell me a little bit about Palantir. I don't know a lot about what you do there.
So Palantir is a end-to-end web development shop. We're 16 years old now. So yeah, we're much older than Drupal. At this point, we are exclusively a Drupal shop. We've been primarily a Drupal shop since around DrupalCon Boston, so something like 5 years now. Hmm. I started at Palantir shortly after I got involved in Drupal. And at the time, Palantir was not a Drupal shop, didn't touch GPL. But over time, some would say, because of my influence, some would say despite my influence, the owners of the company, George and Tiffany, decided that, you know, open source was the right way to go and Drupal was the right way to go, and just moved more and more towards Drupal. Hmm. And that was one of the best decisions we've ever made as a company. We've gone from doing small couple hundred hour projects to multi-thousand hour projects, work with some major universities around the country, major art museums, Field Museum of Natural History, Journal of Foreign Affairs, some corporate clients. We mostly like working with institutional not-for-profits. Hmm. One of the things I like about Palantir is we work with clients that we are happy to support. If one of our clients succeeds in whatever their mission is, we don't want to feel guilty about having helped them in that. And so we will, you know, turn down RFPs from prospective clients that we just aren't comfortable with. We want a client that we can work with, that we like what they do. And so that's why we work with a lot of universities, museums, public radio stations. I think our most recent really big site was marketplace.org. For those who follow public radio, it's Kai Rizdal is awesome, and we did his website, and I'm very happy about that. Hmm. At this point, we're about 25 people, maybe 24. Most of them in Chicago, but we also have people spread out around the U.S., including John Alban Wilkins in Taiwan.
Oh, so he commutes in for the week and...
Yeah, just flies in the morning, flies home at night.
Right. All right, so what's the most recent project you've been working on?
Oh, dear. At Palantir, my current project, I could tell you, but I'd have to kill you. It hasn't launched yet, so...
Okay, don't tell me then.
Yeah, I can tell you it's actually is a content syndication project, the part that we're working on, actually. It's a the multi-vendor project, so I'm working on the content syndication portion of it. Before that, my last project was actually with the Field Museum of Natural History in Chicago. Hmm. That was kind of a different project for us. We were, they've got a huge, huge collection at the Field Museum, like millions and millions of items. And they're in the process of moving all of that into a collection management system called Emu. And that's great for storing data, but wasn't good for searching and sorting it the way they wanted to. Mm-hmm. So we built a two-part system for them, one of which was a standalone PHP command line app written from scratch that sucks data out of their legacy system and maps it into Apache Solr in a variety of different ways. Hmm. And then we built an enhanced Solr module for Drupal called Sarnia that uses Search API to connect to an arbitrary Solr backend. And now they can spin up microsites for different researchers very quickly just by pushing a few buttons on the command line and pushing a few buttons in Drupal and get a targeted microsite for researchers interested in looking at spider specimens around the world. And they have thousands and thousands of spider specimens at the Field Museum and all kinds of stuff that you wouldn't imagine a museum would have this many, bird dropping samples, but they do. And if you're into, the history and evolution of birds, this stuff is awesome.
Huh. So what are you working on specific to Drupal right now?
So these days, I'm actually a core initiative owner or initiative lead. It's a new thing in Drupal 8 that Dries Boitart announced back at DrupalCon Chicago. The idea is that there are some problems within Drupal that are too big and complex to deal with the normal patch workflow and, you know, a couple of people self-organizing and doing a couple of issues. Mm-hmm. And so for those, you know, we need to have someone who can really take ownership of it and drive it and act as kind of the central nexus for major efforts. Because just the normal patch workflow consensus process doesn't work for everything. So I've been working on an initiative called the Web Services and Context Core Initiative, or WSCI. Okay. It is something of a backronym because I don't drink at all. So therefore, the irony of me leading a WSCI initiative is I rather like.
That's funny.
and it's actually the process for what we're doing started before DrupalCon Chicago. Some of your listeners may have heard the word Butler bandied around a while back. Butler got renamed to WSCI and has evolved since then.
Okay.
It's a multi-part attempt to revamp and modernize most of Drupal core because I'm not very ambitious.
So what kind of things are you revamping then?
So kind of where we started off looking was Drupal builds its pages right now backwards. We start by building a content area and then we wrap blocks around it. And those blocks are completely ignorant of the page they're on. And this works great if you're building a blog and works terribly if you're building anything fancier.
Hmm.
And so, you know, Drupal has limped along with this concept for a long time, as did many other systems, to be fair. An awful lot of systems have been built on that model because it is an obvious model to have. You have a content area and decoration. Problem is, that's very limiting. And so we started looking at, okay, how can we make that more flexible? How can we have multiple page layout concepts in Drupal? And what we came down to, me and the people that I was talking to back in 2009, 2010, is that the way Drupal is built, you really do have to reach all the way down Drupal's throat and grab a hold and yank and turn the page around, and you end up with panels. So those who have used the panels module before, or those who haven't, it works on a different model where instead of building this inside area and wrapping stuff around it, you instead start with the layout of the page and then put stuff into it.
Okay.
And so it's inverse from the normal Drupal flow, but ends up being a far more flexible, far more powerful way of approaching a website. The problem is because panels has to fight against Drupal core's design, it ends up being rather big and complex, and the UI isn't that good, and it scares people because the concepts are difficult to explain at times.
Mm-hmm.
But at a conceptual level, it is a better way of building a website. In part because once you turn the process around, each of those chunks of content on the page, you should be able to render independently. And when you can do that, that allows you to do fancier caching, that allows you to do in-browser rendering, partial page caching, all kinds of fun stuff. And we realized along the way that the changes you need to make in order to do that are so fundamental that they're actually the same changes you have to make in order to really support web services within Drupal. And so those kind of got linked for a while as a single umbrella to turn Drupal's, you know, main pipeline around and make it more robust and more capable. And this was a very big task and scared a lot of people because it's a big task.
Yeah. What kind of services are you talking about?
So web services are, let's take a step back. Web, you know, there's the internet, which is stuff flying between computers over wires or wireless.
Uh-huh.
Then there's the web, which is specifically stuff flying between computers over the hypertext transfer protocol, HTTP.
Mm-hmm.
And web browsers do that constantly, and that's a web page. And for most of the web's history, we viewed it as the web is a series of static HTML pages that you click and you display one, and you click and you display one, you click and you display one. Great. And web browsers are built around exactly that model. But the internet, of course, is capable of far more than displaying pages. And HTTP is capable of far, far more than browsers typically exploit. And web services is using the same underlying plumbing of HTTP to send things other than an HTML web page. A lot of that is from website to website, so you can have them talking to each other. A lot of that is website to an application of some kind. Examples would be if you're talking to another server, like a Flickr or Facebook or Twitter from an application or from a web page, you're doing it over web services. That is, you're sending a message using HTTP that is not HTML from your web server to Flickr's web server, and Flickr's web server is responding with something that may not be HTML, but is still sent over HTTP.
Okay.
So that's web services. And once you get that basic idea, then you can do all kinds of things with that, because you can make servers talk to each other in whatever way you want. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, sky's the limit in terms of what kind of APIs you want to implement.
Okay, so this is, I was thinking APIs while you were talking. So this is, how is this using APIs, or is it separate from APIs, or?
It's like this, HTTP is the layer. It's a layer below the normal APIs. So HTTP is actually a lot more flexible than most people realize. You know, if you're used to doing web development, you assume that, or you're familiar with a GET request and a POST request, which are the two kinds that you can send from an HTML form.
Okay.
HTTP actually supports a whole bunch of other types of requests. There's GET, POST, PUT, DELETE. There's even a PATCH request. So you can actually send a command called a patch over HTTP that's in the spec. Most people don't think of these because they are used to a web browser, and web browsers don't let you do that from HTML. But if you're writing PHP code to talk from server to server, if you're writing JavaScript code to call back to your server, you absolutely can use a lot of these fancier parts of the spec that all of the browsers do support, just not in HTML. What you do with that is up to you. Really, HTML is simply an API that's on top of, it's simply a web service where you send an HTML, an HTTP request, and you get back an HTTP response that just coincidentally happens to be an HTML string. But there's nothing in the web that requires it to be, you know, an HTML string that starts with a head tag and ends with an HTML tag and ends with an HTML tag. There's a lot more power there that we're just now really beginning to unlock. And there have been efforts to leverage that in a better way. People may have heard of the term SOAP or XML RPC or REST. These are all somewhat standards for what non-HTML things you can send back and forth. These days, the only one people are still using is REST, which stands for Representational State Transfer, which is really just a fancy name for using the full spectrum of HTTP to the point of identifying data like nodes or users or objects in a store, like an online web store, not by some numeric ID, but by a URL. Because a URL is a universal ID. And so you build your data models and your communication around the idea that a request to a URL is a request for a given object.
Okay.
And that object may have references to other objects in the form of a URL. And then you can reference those other objects. It's really pushing everything out a layer and exposing pure data, using the full HTTP specification. And then a web page is just a particular special case.
Okay, so it's pretty much taking out the assumptions of this is going to be displayed on a web page with, you know, this style. It's more, this is the information, and it can be displayed anywhere, anyhow.
Right. And that, you know, those assumptions that we're dealing with on HTML page, it's going to be displayed in a browser, are baked very deeply into Drupal.
Okay.
Which is not surprising, given, you know, Drupal is 11 years old now. Most systems for a long time were built on that assumption because no one was doing anything different. These days, people are doing things differently. And so what we were trying to do as part of the Web Services Initiative is say, okay, how can we change the way Drupal core works at a very low level so that instead of assuming that an HTML page is the normal response, that everything Drupal does is an HTML page. Mm-hmm. Instead, say everything Drupal does is a REST request. Everything Drupal does is just HTTP in, HTTP out. And in some cases, that is an HTML page. And when it's an HTML page, then we want to do this fancier, smarter layout mechanism inspired by panels.
Okay.
And as you can imagine, this is a very, very big task.
Yes. And this is only for Drupal 8, right? This isn't going to be backported or anything.
All, you know, deep changes to Drupal 8. We're not, okay. None of this touches Drupal 7.
Okay.
So because it was so big, you know, we've actually had a challenge getting people on board with the idea because it's hard to wrap your brain around the entire picture.
Mm-hmm.
And so we actually just had a sprint last weekend hosted by Acquia that had several people who've been working on Whiskey there, Dries, Angie Byron, a number of other developers, to say, okay, how can we figure out how to recast this initiative in a way that is digestible? And the main thing we came away with is we're going to split it up. So by the time this podcast goes out, most of the blog posts about it should have been posted, I hope.
But, yeah, Dries posted one yesterday or today. I don't remember.
Yeah, Dries posted the first blog post. There's going to be more coming.
Okay.
We'll see if they come up by the time this podcast is up. If not, we'll post it in comments.
Okay. Yeah, I guess saying yesterday or today doesn't work when this isn't going out. Okay.
Right.
Anyways.
So I'll be leading what may still be called the Whiskey Initiative. I'm not sure if we're going to rename it. That's dealing with these low-level REST-enabling changes to Drupal.
Okay.
And then we're going to split off a separate layout initiative, details of which we're still working on, to deal with the, okay, now that we know it's an HTML page, now what do we do?
Mm.
And do this fancier layout model. And we're really focusing on what changes do we need to make so that we can do this. And if some of the higher level implementation lives in contrib for Drupal 8, it's not like people with Drupal are not used to dealing with contrib.
On that, real quick, we don't have to go too far to this, but knowing that you don't know how this is going, do you expect that that will be very heavily built off of panels? Like if people are learning panels now, they'll be able to, they'll just know how it works in Drupal 8, or is it going to be something very different, do you think?
All of the code is going to be new.
Okay.
Panels as an implementation, so panels as a concept is really good. It's the direction that we need to be moving.
Okay.
Panels as an implementation suffers from the fact that it was written for PHP 4. It's evolved over time as, you know, bugs have been found, features have been added, features have been tacked on in ways that are ugly but have to be to avoid breaking APIs.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not really going to be leveraging any panels code, but several people from the panels team and CTools team are heavily involved in this work.
Okay.
So we're really trying to leverage that experience to build kind of a better panels that can live, if not in core, can be much more closely coupled to core.
Okay.
And again, that part is being split off to a separate initiative. So I'm not going to be focusing on that going forward. I'll be dealing mostly with the web services and REST behaviors and, you know, using all of HTTP within Drupal.
Okay, so what is this all going to mean for Drupal site builders and module developers?
So the services level changes that I'm going to be focused on shouldn't affect site builders that much. You know, the people who just click together a site and push buttons won't see a huge change as a result of that. The layout portions that are getting split off, those will have a big impact, but I'm going to let the lead for that initiative talk more about that. For module developers, the idea is to offer a much more robust set of tools so they can, you know, respond to any HTTP request, not just a page. Hopefully, we can clean up some of our code, like our AHA replacement system we have in Drupal 7. Mm-hmm. Conceptually, what it does is rather nice. The way it's implemented is not so nice because it has to work around the fact that Drupal still assumes that it's an HTML page. And so something like that, that API should get easier to work with. The way you define a page body should get more flexible. And ideally, we'd like to make it easier to move, you know, different pages and different forms to new places so you can customize Drupal more easily and more readily without having to hack core, because no one likes to hack core.
Mm-hmm. I asked on Twitter earlier if anybody had any questions for you, and Thomas R. was wondering if you're considering using Symfony 2 bundles in the next Drupal release.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about Symfony, and Dries' blog post goes into it a little bit. For those who are not familiar with it, Symfony is another open source project. It's technically Symfony 2 is the name of the project now. And last summer or so, we were looking at this problem space and saying, you know what? We can't be the first people to try to do this. We know we're not the first people to try to do this. We're an open source project. Let's see if there's existing open source code out there that we can leverage. And so we looked at a couple of different options and settled on the HTTP Foundation library that is part of Symfony 2. Symfony 2 is a full stack framework. So Drupal is a content management system. It's a CMS. Mm-hmm. Symfony 2 is an application framework, so it's intended to be used by developers to build a one-off application. Mm. But the way it's built, a lot of its underlying plumbing is discrete components that you can pull out and use independently of Symfony. One of them is HTTP Foundation, which provides a very nice abstraction for that incoming request and then an outgoing response. So rather than looking at the get and post super global variables, which are ugly and error-prone and make testing god-awful,
okay,
you get a nice encapsulated object that does a lot of filtering for you and, you know, provides decoding of things like language information that you don't need to maintain as a global. You can actually pass around and have a much more encapsulated system. And then instead of printing data and calling headers and hoping you set your header in the right place before you printed anything, you simply populate a response object and set headers on it, set its content, and so forth. It takes care of normalizing things to follow HTTP properly, and then you send it. And that send process, that object will then sort out sending headers first, sending headers in the right order, setting cache control, stuff that you don't have to think about, and then sending the body. And that just gives you a lot more ability to leverage HTTP with less effort and without having to think about all of the nitty-gritty details. So that's HTTP Foundation. And so we looked at that and said, you know what? We can't write anything better than that. And even if we did, it would have taken us 3 years to do, and we don't have 3 years, so let's use that. Looking further, I was, you know, working on some ideas in November, December, to try and, you know, so our, some of our early efforts with the Whiskey Initiative had met with a lot of resistance because people didn't understand what we're trying to do. Mm-hmm. And so I was kind of feeling frustrated and talking to some Symphony developers about what you're trying to do. And one of them took several hours to walk me through another Symphony component called HTTP kernel, which is the core of the Symphony system. And I realized, like, 90% of what it is we're trying to do at an architectural deep level, Symphony already does. And the code they have for it is well encapsulated, and we can pull that out and use it independently of the full Symphony framework. And it's designed to encourage that kind of interoperability. So why don't we?
Yeah.
And, you know, talk to some other people, put together a quick proof of concept, posted that online on Christmas Eve, because I'm like that. And, you know, the feedback was mostly a combination of, oh my God, that's awesome. Oh my God, that's awesome, but scary. And, eek, this is too different. Most of it was those first two. So we had a sprint at Acquia, as I mentioned. And one of the people at the sprint was, I'm going to butcher his name, I apologize, Fabien Potencier, who is the project lead for Symphony 2, who is a very nice guy. And in, just as a group, about a dozen of us, we looked at and said, you know what? This is what we're trying to do. What Symphony is built for at this level is exactly the kind of stuff we are trying to architect. And that, you know, so why don't we just use it? It also helps that the Symphony people I've talked to are all very nice, friendly people. Fabien's actually fixed some bugs for us already. So, you know, we're not, you know, just like we partnered with jQuery before on the front end, by pulling in these other systems from Symphony, we're getting access to not only some very high quality code that does what we wanted to do ourselves, getting access to some really smart, really friendly people who can help us leverage it well.
Okay, so everything you're saying, to be honest, is, a lot of it's going over my head right now. I am actually a music teacher doing Drupal on the side. So am I going to be able to keep up with all of this and all the changes that are going on?
I think so. You know, you're actually, well, first of all, thank you. We need more good music teachers in the world. But that's not unusual in Drupal. An awful lot of people in Drupal, you know, came, you know, I, like, they learned PHP for the purpose of learning Drupal. They didn't learn PHP and then come to Drupal. And that's, I think, becoming a problem. Drupal used to be, you know, one of its advantages is that random people could get involved and copy and paste some code and learn what they're doing as they do it. And, you know, it was very, very easy for people to pick up without having fancy computer science degrees. And that used to be the case. As of Drupal 7, the general consensus and general feeling is that that's not the case anymore. Drupal has actually gotten rather difficult for people to pick up because it's so abstracted in such a very unique way. And that makes it difficult for music teachers or computer science grads to pick it up. One of the things that using Symphony gets us is a way to help ramp up towards more traditional, more conventional techniques, more conventional forms of abstraction that are actually easier to pick up with the right documentation than a lot of what Drupal does currently, and is more familiar to more people. At this, you know, 10 years ago, most people writing PHP were self-taught and kind of figured things out as they went, you know, the proverbial kid in the parents' basement type thing. That's not the case anymore. Most people working with PHP today have worked on some other system before. They have some kind of training. They are familiar with modern techniques like object orientation or functional programming. Even the people who are casual developers, not you know, hardcore computer science graduates, that's still the case. And so one of the side effects of this effort is then the Symfony components would actually be easier to pick up for new developers, as well as, you know, gives us access to a huge pool of Symfony developers who are out there who now have a reason to learn Drupal. Because if Drupal becomes a Symfony using really, really powerful CMS, then people who know Symfony and want a CMS, they can look at Drupal. At the same time, we do have a large number of existing developers for whom some of the stuff is not all that obvious. And I don't know, those people who follow me on my blog probably see that I write an awful lot of kind of fancy design pattern-y architecture academic type stuff.
Okay.
And you know, a lot of my DrupalCon presentations are also kind of highly abstract, highly advanced programming technique. What I've been trying to do there is actually help bring the community up and take people who have, you know, casual backgrounds and introduce them to more, I don't want to say professional, because that's not really, it's not really a professional versus unprofessional split, but more structured and clean and understood patterns and techniques. That when you're just throwing something together, you know, oftentimes you don't pay attention to. But when that thing you've thrown together grows to the size of Drupal, you need to start paying attention.
Yeah.
So, you know, kind of what I've been trying to do is provide resources for Drupal developers to start thinking about things in a different way, thinking in terms of looking at big pictures, taking a holistic view, looking at the trade-offs, because you can't, you know, you can't always have your cake and eat it too. You know, looking outside of Drupal to say, you know, let's get off our island and learn from academia, learn from other projects, learn from, you know, just trolling through Wikipedia, and really help Drupal as a community change from a very powerful, very insular island to a leader of web frameworks in general. And that's a transition that I think we're poised to be able to make, and we can make, if we're willing to say, you know what, we're going to look forward, not back. And we want to learn how to, you know, we want to learn from others so that we can become even better, not just better than we are now, but better than everyone else out there. You know, open source way. You know, learn from others, borrow from others, build something even more awesome.
Okay, so you said, you know, talking with others, but what other kinds of things should Drupal developers do in order to get better at this?
So there's a couple of things. Most of them come down to looking outside the box. I hate to use that phrase, but it's true. If you write PHP code, you should be following Planet PHP on your RSS feed. It's just a blog roll of people writing PHP itself, people working on other projects, and you can learn a ton just by seeing what people are doing outside of the Drupal sphere. If you're a PHP developer, take the time to learn JavaScript. It's a very different way of developing, but it helps you expand your mind and come back and say, okay, concepts from that, what can I leverage in PHP? If you're a JavaScript developer working mostly on the front end, take the time to learn PHP for all the same reasons. People like to hate on PHP at times, but there's a lot of things it does really right. There's a lot of things that JavaScript does really right. And there's also reasons to despise both of them. And that's true of any popular language.
Yeah.
So, you know, go outside, you know, your normal box, whatever your box is, and try and learn something new. And then take what you learned there and come back to what you're doing and see what can you change. One of the best things I ever did for myself as a PHP developer was spend an entire day just reading about Erlang. For those not familiar with it, Erlang is a purely functional programming language written by Ericsson to run high-end network switches for phone companies,
okay.
Which means it does an awful lot of things so differently than PHP. It's a strictly functional language, which means you don't have state. You cannot modify a variable after you create it. There is no such thing as a global. Physically, it's not there. functions are really cheap. You can have functions that return functions that return functions, like in JavaScript. Hmm. And it's just so different than what you're used to writing with, you know, your casual throw a couple of functions together PHP. But that helps you realize the advantage of things like encapsulation, abstraction, the value of saying, no, I don't want to expose every variable to everything everywhere at every time. Yeah, that gives you the flexibility of alter hooks. It also makes actual unit testing physically impossible. It makes breaking the page up and rendering it in two separate pieces and two separate processes impossible. When you start to look at these techniques that you may not be used to from other communities, from other languages, you can take that back and say, okay, I'm not writing in Erlang. I've never written a line of Erlang, but I noticed my own PHP code got cleaner and got more flexible as a result of the time I spent looking at Erlang. Learning JavaScript better and looking at things like anonymous functions and closures, you can then come back to PHP and realize, ah, now I understand why, say, the database layer is written the way it is with its chained methods. Now I understand why I want to use an anonymous function for my array map calls. And you can just really bring in this knowledge from outside to help yourself and then everyone else that you're writing code for or everyone else you're writing code with as well. And people learn from each other all the time, and they should. Look in new places to learn and bring that knowledge back and share it with everyone else around you.
Okay.
I'm sure that sounds kind of fancy and pie in the sky, but I'm serious about it. The benefits to Drupal people of looking at things that are not Drupal or not PHP are enormous. And the benefits to Drupal of looking at things that are not Drupal and not PHP are enormous. PHP by nature steals things from all kinds of different languages conceptually. And there's no reason that Drupal shouldn't do the same. And, when we find something good, let's use it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's go ahead and wrap this up then. And there's always a couple of questions I ask everybody on the show. And the first is, what are you most excited about that's up and coming that you're not necessarily involved with?
Probably the most exciting thing going on in Drupal 8 that I'm not dealing with is the configuration management initiative that Greg Dunlap is running. The idea there is this, another big fundamental but very important change. Currently, Drupal puts all of its configuration in the database, which for anyone who's tried to run an enterprise-level site means deploying changes and configuration changes is a huge pain. And things like views exports and the features module help, but they are still something of a pain. The configuration management initiative is trying to move all of our configuration out of the database onto disk in a standard format that is more powerful than variable get and variable set, which means that deploying changes becomes really easy. Everything's on disk to begin with, so you just check it into Git or SVN or whatever your version control is, push it around. I'm oversimplifying somewhat, but the potential there for really standardizing the way we deal with configuration in a way that supports deployment is huge. And there's a patch for that that's most of the way done at this point, but does desperately need new comments. We can drop that into the show notes as well.
Yeah, I'll link to that.
That's huge for making Drupal able to scale better to higher end sites, as well as just more better workflow for development. And that actually dovetails nicely with the web services stuff I'm working on, where ideally we'll be able to, over services, take configuration and content and throw it from site to site to site in a standard way, which right now there's really no good way of doing. So that's kind of a really nice future that I'd like to see us driving towards faster than we are.
Cool. And where can people find out more about you and your projects?
So me, come up and ask me. things I'm working on. Palantir.net. I periodically blog there about Drupal stuff or stuff that Palantir is working on. My own site, www.garfieldtech.com, is mostly Drupal content. Occasionally I post about politics, but for the most part, it's Drupal architecture level stuff.
Okay.
you can follow me on Twitter at Krell, C-R-E-L-L. I am not on Facebook, so don't look for me because I refuse to use Facebook. and I will also be speaking at DrupalCon Denver. So if you're coming to DrupalCon Denver, I'll be talking about architectural trade-offs there, like how you balance functionality versus flexibility versus performance versus learnability and that sort of thing. I also highly recommend Fibien from Symfony is presenting in the Coder Track on Symfony 2 and the parts of Symfony 2 that we're using for Drupal. If you're interested in the future of Drupal core, go to that session. Please go to that session.
Okay.
There's also a couple of talks in Core Conversations. I'm giving one on the Web Services Initiative and kind of the split that's happening there. So if you want more information, come to that session. We actually just announced the schedule for Denver. So that's on Tuesday, first day.
Okay.
There's also a session on the last day that I think is exciting, Thursday morning in Core Conversations by Demia Tourneau from Drupal and Lucas Smith from Symfony, who are talking about PHP CR, which is another kind of a data modeling standard for providing standard way to access a standard API for accessing data objects within PHP. Think of it as platform agnostic nodes. And the potential there of being able to communicate directly with other projects is really cool. I'm curious to see where that goes. So if that's a topic you're interested in, come to that session as well.
All right. And that's DrupalCon Denver, right?
That's DrupalCon Denver, which is coming up March 19th through 23rd. That's in just over a month from right now. You want to be there. It should be an awesome show. and I did a disclaimer. I am the global track chair for the Coder Track and for the Core Conversation Track. So I did have a hand in picking sessions. So if you don't like it, like what the sessions are, don't blame me too much, please. But if you like them, then it's all me. You can give me all the credit for it.
Okay, I'll do that. Actually, this will be my first DrupalCon. I'm going to Denver this year. So
I'll see you there then.
Yeah, I'm real excited about it.
Yeah.
So are you also involved with DrupalCon Munich then?
Yes, as a global track chair. That's a new thing we're rolling out for DrupalCons. So every track now has one track chair who goes from con to con to con.
Okay.
To provide some kind of continuity. And then a local track chair who is specific to that conference. So I was a track chair for Chicago. We kind of skipped over that for London. Now I'm a global track chair for Denver and then for Munich.
Okay.
Munich is still in early stages, but I'm really excited. We actually are already working on some of our featured speakers for that. And I can't go into names. I want people to stay excited about Denver, but I'm really excited about some of the people that we're able to get for the Coder Track that are from outside the Drupal community. And the Munich's slogan is opening up to the broader world. Mm. And that's, as a something I'm interested in myself. So some of the speakers that we're going to have there from outside Drupal that are still going to be very relevant to web development in general, not just as keynotes, but as regular featured speakers, I'm really excited about that. So anyone in Europe, you want to go to DrupalCon Munich, anyone in the US, you still want to go to DrupalCon Munich, it'll be worth it. In the meantime, go to DrupalCon Denver.
I'm definitely going to Denver. We'll see if the funds are there for Munich.
Yeah. And just a shout out, the ticket price for Denver goes up on, I believe, the 21st, which is coming up less than a week after you should be hearing this podcast. So get your tickets now.
Yep.
Yeah. It should be a good show. We've got some great keynote speakers lined up. Not just Dries, we also have Luke Rubluski, who is one of the leaders in responsive and mobile-first design speaking. and Mitchell Baker from the Mozilla Foundation is also a keynote. So I'm looking forward to it. Hope to see everyone there.
All right. Well, before we sign off, I did promise Paul Johnson that I'd mention a couple of things about DrupalCon Munich. There are going to be a couple of links in the show notes for behind the scenes of DrupalCon Munich and the DrupalCon Munich community page. So look for those if you're interested in that, especially if you're in Europe and aren't coming to Denver, just to get you a little excited about that.
But if you're in Europe, you should still be coming to Denver.
All right. Well, Larry, thanks for coming on the show. This was very insightful, and I will definitely have to listen to this myself a few times to catch everything that we've talked about.
Right. Thank you. And if people do have additional questions about web services and what we're working on, I am often hanging out in the Drupal-Whiskey IRC channel.
Okay.
And not always available to talk, but if I am, feel free to ask. Just try to read some of the background before we start talking, like this podcast. But okay, if you're interested in getting involved, that's the place to find me usually.
Great. All right. Well, thanks for coming on, Larry. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Thank you.
As always, I'd love a rating or review in iTunes. Just head on over and let me know what you think. So thanks in advance for that. You can find the show notes for this episode at modulesunraveled.com/podcast/009. There you'll find all the links we've mentioned in the show, as well as some additional information, such as the blog post that Larry has not yet written. If there's someone you'd like to hear on the show or a subject that you'd like to hear about, you can either send that to me on Twitter at modsunraveled or through the contact page at modulesunraveled.com. Thanks for all the encouragement that's been coming in about the show. I'm really looking forward to meeting with you guys at DrupalCon Denver. And that's all I have for this week. So I'll just talk to you next Sunday.